Welcome to The End of Innocence. I'm your host, John Young. Last week, we started looking at groups who benefited the most from JFK's assassination. We looked at the military-industrial complex and the CIA. This week, we're going to look at another very powerful entity that existed in the United States back in the early 60s, the mob. In the aftermath of President Kennedy's assassination, a legacy of secrecy and deception is born. If you believe the witness testimony that there were at least two shooters in Dealey Plaza, that means one of two things. It either means conspiracy, or one of the world's most unbelievable coincidences. In 2011, 48 years after the assassination, an informant came forward to reveal what could be the mob's darkest secret ever.
You know, when it comes to murder, he was a genius. He could get anybody killed.
And if that's true, think about what it means. The mob killed our president. And they got away with it.
Something has happened in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade route. There's numerous people running up the hill alongside Elm Street, there by the Simmons Freeway. Several police officers are rushing up the hill at this time. Stand by.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago.
This is just in from Dallas. Homicide Chief Captain Will Fritz said today the assassination case against Lee Harvey Oswald is cinched. He said flatly, "This is the man that killed President Kennedy, 24-year-old Lee Harvey Oswald."
In 1985 at Texarkana, Texas Federal Prison, a bank robber strikes up an unlikely friendship with a mafia kingpin, the notorious boss of the Louisiana mob, Carlos Marcello.
I don't know why he would tell me things, but I know that we got along very well together. I liked him and despised him. There were times that if you didn't know what he had done to people over the years, that you would really like to be around him and talk to him.
The bank robber, Jack Van Lanningham, would become an informant for the FBI and soon hear the Godfather make a startling admission.
In my guts, I was so shocked and horrified.
This admission that Lanningham was told, if true, might finally solve the nation's most infamous and enduring murder mystery.
Parkland, that the president was hit in the head. President Kennedy has been assassinated. It's official now. The president is dead.
For over 60 years now, the assassination of President John F. Kennedy has remained a subject of intense debate. Did Lee Harvey Oswald act alone, or was he even involved in the assassination at all? And if not him, then who?
There is a substantial body of witness testimony in the plaza that said that shots came from different directions.
I think that most people get bogged into the question of the single bullet, what happened, grassy knoll shooters, puff of smoke, as opposed to the much more difficult question of if it was Oswald, was it part of a conspiracy, or was he doing it on his own?
But in a split second, the man in the middle of it all was silenced.
He's been shot. Lee Oswald has been shot. There's the man with a gun. It's absolute panic. Absolute panic.
So who was Jack Ruby? And what really drove him to kill Oswald?
Jack Ruby was no national hero who was just pained by how the death of JFK would have hurt Jacqueline Kennedy, which was his story. That's preposterous on its face.
With the nation stunned, the new president, Lyndon Johnson, acts quickly.
We have suffered a loss that cannot be weighed. For me, it is a deep personal tragedy.
7 days after JFK's death, Lyndon Johnson directs Supreme Court Justice Earl Warren to investigate the assassination.
The Warren Commission conducted basically a shooter investigation. Who pulled the trigger?
The Warren Commission concluded that there were 3 shots fired in Dealey Plaza, all came from the rear, and all were fired by Lee Harvey Oswald, acting alone.
While the press at the time largely accepts the commission's report, much of the public simply doesn't buy it.
There was tremendous pressure on that commission to see what happened as an isolated, bizarre act that didn't have other evil implications of internationalism or organized crime.
They decided very early that we need to show the American people, not find the truth, but these are what we need to show the American people, that it's not the Russians, so we don't have to have World War III.
To many, the seeds of JFK's assassination are sown on the island of Havana, 90 miles from Florida. In the 1950s, the Cuban dictator Batista allows American mobsters to transform Havana into a Caribbean Las Vegas. The partnership reaps untold millions, but all that collapses in 1959 when an army of revolutionaries led by Fidel Castro overthrows the government. As thousands of Cubans flee the island, the mafia is forced out of its casinos. When Castro invites the help of his communist allies, the dreaded Soviet Union, the Cold War arrives on America's doorstep.
I, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, do solemnly swear
that you will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
In 1961, the Cuban crisis awaits the new American president. Working closely with his brother Bobby, the new Attorney General, Kennedy takes on Castro. He greenlights plans for a CIA-sponsored sneak attack on Cuba at a place called the Bay of Pigs. But unknown to the Kennedys, the CIA has another scheme in place.
It's very well documented that in the summer of 1960, the CIA began working with the mafia in a plot to kill Fidel Castro while keeping it secret from the Kennedys.
The mob, which had lost all of its casinos and its gambling operations and that, would love to have been back into Cuba and operating for profit again. The CIA often deals with questionable independent contractors. It has a storied history of doing that. So was it surprising that they had done a deal together with the mob to try to kill Castro? Not at all.
While the Kennedys desperately want to take down Castro, they are adamantly against the CIA hiring the mob to do it, for good reason.
It's very difficult for many people today to realize just how powerful the mafia was in America in the 1950s and into the early 1960s.
They were vicious, they were violent, and they corrupted public officials.
In every major community of the United States, there is organized crime. It's growing greater and greater every year. Where there is corruption of public officials, and there is some in every major community, that has to be rooted out.
Starting in the late 1950s, the Kennedy brothers launched unprecedented attacks on the American mafia.
We were breathing down their neck. We were indicting people on a daily basis. They were outraged at the pressures that we were putting on them.
It was a massive assault, but they particularly target 3 mafia families.
In Bobby Kennedy's sights are Sam Giancana, godfather of the Chicago outfit. Johnny Roselli is Giancana's man in Vegas and Hollywood. The boss in Tampa, Florida, Santo Traficante Jr., maintains strong ties in Cuba and a close partnership with Louisiana kingpin Carlos Marcello.
Carlos Marcello was of particular interest to the Kennedys because he was not a citizen. He had been born in Tunisia of Sicilian parents, then brought to America.
In 1961, unable to indict Marcello, Bobby Kennedy pressures immigration authorities to deport him to Guatemala, the country Marcello falsely claimed as his birthplace.
They put him in handcuffs, put him on an airplane. And Carlos Marcello was a man with a great deal of dignity. And the notion that somebody else would put their hands on him is an insult, a major insult.
And Marcello was livid. This was America's most powerful godfather. All the time, he's cursing Bobby Kennedy, whom he blames for everything.
It takes weeks, but according to the Border Patrol, Carlos Marcelo gets his close associate and pilot David Ferry to sneak him back into the U.S. We've heard that name many times, haven't we? Remember the Jim Garrison investigation? While the Kennedys have Marcelo and the other bosses against the wall, author Lamar Waldron, a longtime Kennedy assassination researcher, believes the Godfathers found a way to carry out the ultimate revenge on the Kennedys.
They had to kill JFK to end the Kennedys' war against them, or literally they were going to go out of business.
In 1961, the newly elected President John F. Kennedy and the new Attorney General Bobby Kennedy are gaining momentum in the crusade to wipe out the mob. What the brothers don't realize is that the CIA is maintaining an illicit relationship with the same mafia bosses the Kennedys are trying to prosecute.
Unknown to JFK, the CIA was continuing to work with Trafficante, Roselli, and Sam Giancana in a secret plot to kill Fidel Castro.
To the Kennedys' utter dismay, the invasion of Cuba at the Bay of Pigs is also fatally flawed.
Bay of Pigs had failed in spectacular fashion because it was such an open secret, because so many people in Washington knew about it. And so it became such an open secret that eventually Fidel Castro knew about it.
Many of those involved in the operation bitterly blamed JFK for not providing American military support to the Cuban exiles. The failed invasion brings the Cold War to America's backyard. A year later, U.S. spy planes confirmed the Kennedys' worst fears, nuclear missile sites in Cuba.
The purpose of these bases can be none other than to provide a nuclear strike capability against the Western Hemisphere.
Although JFK publicly defuses the tense nuclear standoff, privately he and Bobby realize the Cuban Missile Crisis is far from over.
Part of the deal to end the Cuban Missile Crisis was to allow UN inspections for weapons of mass destruction in Cuba. But Fidel Castro refused. So there was no way for JFK to actually verify that all the Soviet nuclear missiles had been removed.
The Kennedys need a new plan to deal with Castro. Authors Lamar Waldron and Tom Hartman believe that in the spring of 63, a Cuban exile leader and friend of the Kennedys, Enrique Ruiz Williams, brings them one.
This was a very closely held plan because it involved the number three man in Cuba at that time, the head of the Cuban army, Commander Juan Almeida. Commander Almeida essentially said, look, I'll stage the coup, I'll eliminate Castro, but this can't be a Bay of Pigs type things. They've got to be willing to fully back me to the hilt if I'm going to do this.
What made this unique from all of the various CIA plots to kill Castro was that this wasn't a CIA plot to kill Castro. This was the number three guy in the government of Cuba reaching out to the Kennedy administration saying, let's work together to have a peaceful transition in Cuba that involves the end of Fidel.
A coup d'etat led by a popular Cuban general may be the Kennedys' best shot at eliminating the Soviet threat nearby. But if the plan is uncovered, it could also bring the superpowers back to the brink of nuclear war. Despite the risks, Lamar Waldron and others believe the Kennedys launched the coup with Almeida. CIA documents show the operation codename AmWorld is set for December 1, 1963. Waldron believes that unknown to the Kennedys, CIA agents Bernard Barker and David Morales leaked details of the Kennedys' top secret coup plans to their friends in the mob.
Bernard Barker was a longtime operative for Santo Trafficante. David Morales, who ran operations at the CIA's huge Miami station, he had grown very close to Johnny Roselli, working on the plots to kill Castro.
So was it with this knowledge that the mob, whose very survival is threatened by the Kennedys, discovers a way to rub out the president and not get caught?
They're going to kill JFK in a way that you cannot possibly fully expose how JFK was killed without also exposing the coup plan, potentially triggering World War III.
If they could infiltrate and blow up this plan to assassinate Castro and in the process kill Jack, then the entire national security apparatus that was trying to protect us from World War III, that entire national security net would drop on the entire thing and seal it up tight for years, maybe decades, maybe centuries.
So it is likely that in the summer of 1963, a few of America's most powerful mafia bosses are planning their biggest hit ever. In November of 1963, it's believed the Kennedys are just days away from executing their secret plan to eliminate Fidel Castro. but it is likely that rogue elements in the CIA have revealed the top secret plot to Mafia bosses Santo Traficani and Johnny Roselli.
The Mafia was able to infiltrate the coup plan by using the connections they had developed with the CIA starting in the summer of 1960, before JFK was even elected. If we flash ahead to 1963, you have Johnny Roselli continuing to secretly work with the CIA without the knowledge of the Kennedys.
Under increasing threat from Bobby Kennedy, it's believed that Mafia bosses find in the coup plan a way to stop their real enemy, not Fidel Castro, but the U.S. Attorney General.
Carlos Marcello very colorfully explained that if you have a dog and you cut off its tail, meaning Bobby Kennedy, the head of the dog, meaning JFK, will turn around and bite you. But if you cut off the head of the dog, meaning kill JFK, then the tail quits wagging on its own. So the Mafia developed their plan to kill JFK, and the first attempt was not in Dallas, but it was actually planned for Chicago.
Secret Service agent Abraham Bolden was one of 13 agents in Chicago preparing for the president's visit on November 2, 1963.
About the end of October, we began hearing rumors of an assassination squad that followed him from Miami, as we understood.
A day before the president is due in Chicago, the Miami intercepts take on a sudden urgency.
A lady called the U.S. Secret Service office. She said that she was a landlady in a building where there were two Cubans were staying. And she went in to do something in the apartment, and she saw four rifles in the room. Also in the room there was a newspaper, and she thought it was turned to the route that President Kennedy was supposed to take. During the process of keeping them under surveillance, one of the agents got too close to one of the suspects. In fact, that the suspect heard his radio go off, and right away they began to pack up and they fled.
Agent Bolden's fears intensify when another suspect, an ex-Marine with ties to militant anti-Castro Cubans, surfaces in Chicago. An ex-Marine with ties to anti-Castro Cubans? That doesn't sound familiar, now does it? It is likely that if the assassination occurred in Chicago, Lee Harvey Oswald wouldn't be such a household name. But instead, we would all know the name Thomas Arthur Valley.
And so it was decided that the Chicago police would pull this guy over for any reason whatsoever so that we would get a chance to search his car.
If you can listen to this and think there wasn't a plan A, B, and possibly C in the assassination of John Kennedy, I don't know what to tell you. 2 hours before JFK's planned motorcade, Chicago police stop Thomas Arthur Valley. In the trunk of his car, they find an M1 rifle and 3,000 rounds of ammunition. Even more troubling, agents learn that Valley works in a printing company that overlooks the president's motorcade route. No, seriously.
Valley had several interesting parallels to Lee Harvey Oswald. He was an ex-Marine like Oswald. Both Valley and Oswald at the same time got jobs along the projected motorcade route for JFK.
At 9:15 a.m., as eager bystanders line the president's motorcade route, JFK's press secretary abruptly announces the cancellation of the president's trip. If only that would have happened in Dallas. One thing I will never understand is why the threats in Chicago were taken seriously, but known threats in Dallas were ignored.
The Mafia didn't have three different plans to kill JFK. They had one plan and tried it in three different cities. The second city where they tried was 4 days before Dallas and Tampa, Florida.
2 weeks after the aborted Chicago motorcade, JFK is scheduled to pass through the turf of Mafia godfather Santo Traficante.
That day, JFK had the longest motorcade in America of his entire presidency. And the chief of police, who I talked to about this, said they advised the Secret Service to tell JFK to cancel, not to come. There was no way they could possibly protect him.
Some researchers believe that JFK could not cancel for a very important reason. They say that night JFK was scheduled to give a speech, which he knew Commander Almeida would be listening for in Cuba.
Buried within that speech would be two lines that the CIA had helped to carefully write as reassurance for Commander Almeida in Cuba.
No Cuban need feel trapped between dependence on the broken promises of foreign communism and the hostility of the rest of the hemisphere.
And so JFK made the calculated decision to go ahead with that motorcade despite the advice of the Tampa Police Department, knowing he could be shot at any time. What we know now is that Santo Trafficante found out the police knew there was an assassination plot, and so Trafficante called off the attempt.
The Secret Service received about 1,300 threats of what they consider against the president's life. You have to ask the question, is there a tie from Oswald to the other attempts?
President Kennedy, his wife with him, flew to Texas today on a political or non-political trip.
Some researchers believe that one of the masterminds behind the plot, Carlos Marcello, though 500 miles away on trial in a New Orleans courthouse, had things under control in Dallas.
If the mob wanted to take out Kennedy, how would they do it? They could either send somebody in a black shirt and a white tie and a machine gun, and everybody would know the mob just did it. What they would do in this kind of situation is not do that. They would try to have a cutout, somebody who would not look like the mob, and he would take it.
12 years after the controversial Warren Commission concluded that Oswald had acted alone in killing the president, Congress launches a new investigation of JFK's assassination. In 1979, the House Select Committee on Assassinations, led by veteran mafia prosecutor G. Robert Blakely, has come to a very different conclusion than the Warren Commission.
Trying to make a judgment about what happened. And it's my best judgment that he was killed as a result of a conspiracy. And the shape and color of the conspiracy is organized crime.
Blakely's investigation examines a mountain of evidence, including hundreds of hours of secret FBI wiretaps of mafia godfathers.
We got surveillance from all over the country in the 11 months before the assassination. And it's interesting. There's a conversation in Philadelphia between the head of the family at that time. We ought to whack Kennedy. We ought to whack the big one, the little one. They were talking about killing the president, killing Robert Kennedy. All of a sudden, I'm in the conclusion that they certainly had the motive. They didn't have the surveillance on Carlos Marcello that would have given me the kind of information that would indicate that he did it or that he didn't do it.
Next week on The End of Innocence, the JFK assassination, we will continue to look at the mob and what role they could have played in the assassination of John Kennedy. In 1977, the House Select Committee on Assassinations takes on the mob directly and subpoenas the testimony of the godfathers themselves. We'll hear all about that next week. And also, you won't believe what the informant in the Texarkana prison was told by mafia kingpin Carlos Marcello. We'll see you next week.